I'm going to talk about some ideas to do with educational development. Their connection with the Index for Inclusion is that has become a vehicle for the dissemination and discussion and dialogue about those ideas, as well as it being an instrument for promoting educational development. I kind of had this sort of somewhat provocative subheading, which was beyond cleaning a floor with a dirty rag. And I think that you know, we have that idea that we've carefully worked out some scheme of intervention, and then we find both the circumstances are more complex than we ever thought, and people don't respond in the ways that we would. Yeah, good idea.
I'm going to try and illustrate my ineptitude here.
That's it. Yeah.
But I think that
there was only one person's ineptitude, I think, that was illustrated there, Mike. I introduced this idea of cleaning a floor with a dirty rag to convey that sense that maybe others have shared of thinking that we're kind of about to intervene and change things in a clear way that we've carefully thought out, and discovering both the circumstances are different from the way we thought, and our great interventions aren't responded to in quite the way that we would like. And I was surprised in introducing that metaphor with people who, actually, Yolanda, who's here from Spain, she and I have been working together in Chile, but I introduced this metaphor to teachers in Chile, and they understood it perfectly. That is that that's often what they feel they're doing, and what they expect us also perhaps to be feeling we're doing is never quite grappling with sufficient detail in order to change things in the way that we would like. And it isn't surprising, because when we think that it's going to be all right to intervene in the lives of others, we forget how difficult it is to intervene in areas closer to home. How hard it is to change slightly the views of those we work perhaps most closely with in order to ease the work that we're doing. I suppose for those who work in universities, I think universities probably are extremely difficult places to change, and it's a wonderful part of the sort of human comedy that we who work in universities sort of happily move out from those places that we bang our heads against the wall because we can't change, into areas where we think we're going to immediately transform the lives of others. So things are quite tricky. And then I've sort of cleared that a bit. I'm going to talk about some way in which I understand educational development. And I think it's surprising to me that you can read whole books about educational development and never find the notion of educational development given a definition. And then I will talk about how some of those ideas about educational development are used within this new edition of the Index for Inclusion, and finish with some consideration of the extent to which they can help to reduce the mess of intervention. You know, I like those two ideas of Hannah Arendt. It's the idea that we want to intervene, but we're always too late. That natality is that making something new, and belatedness is that we want to make something new in circumstances that are rushing past us all the time. I don't know if any of you saw that film. I didn't like it much myself, but I think it... Did anyone else see this film, The Tree of Life? You didn't fancy it. No, well, you did well. You avoided it. But it was a familiar story. You know, it had a central character who was an aggressive and rather abusive male head of the family, and so on. But I think part of what we were meant to understand in this film was that, you know, it all went wrong so long ago that there wasn't kind of much chance of putting it right now. And in that film, it sort of goes back to kind of the origins of the universe. You know, so it went wrong then. So in those sort of, it's a kind of rather pessimistic tale of the possibilities of intervention. But we're also aware that things did go wrong in those situations where we're trying to put right, perhaps some time ago. There's a little message in the middle of this poster of the film here, which says, "Nothing stands still," which is also a kind of a motto about, or a mantra that worth thinking about in terms of intervention, because, you know, people always say, you know, that everybody's so resistant to change, but they're in a process of incredible change all the time. And so that's also a paradox, and that's also a possibility for building some kind of intervention. Because it's not the change that is disturbing, it's the lack of control over change that's disturbing, and that's the situation people find themselves in. So perhaps that gives some kind of possibility for how one might think about intervention. I kind of... When I'm thinking about school development, I always remind myself to think about what the nature of a school is. And a school makes a contribution to the education of a community. It's not a building. And sometimes it's best to think of it not as a building, not as a place that is separate from the world. That's quite a good view. Also, that's a view of a school. It's a view looking outwards to a community. So that's a kind of another conception of schools that's worth thinking about, that schools have a relationship to communities. And sometimes the only kind of view of a school we take is the inside, the community inside. We struggle to kind of operate, I think, within a system which has belated intervention. It already has a style of educational development. And the style that is around at the moment may not be to everybody's liking. This is, so we might want to move beyond tests, targets, and inspections, but there is a sort of dominant view of educational development, and perhaps we have this glorious notion that if anyone says to you that staff morale is at an all-time low, you know you're doing something right. That's the new chief inspector of schools, ex-head of Mossbourne Academy in Haringey. And out of that, I kind of think about what it means to demoralize. And I think it has two meanings. One is to dishearten, to take away a sense of self-worth and accomplishment, which can be useful to some approaches to development. And maybe even more useful is the idea that to demoralize means to alienate people from their fundamental beliefs and values, to take away their moral sense, their moral literacy, their ability to conduct moral argument or to understand the moral basis of their action, to alienate people from their fundamental beliefs and values, the motives for their actions. So my idea about development is to move away from the demoralizing approach. And I think sometimes we don't realize quite how hidden morality has become within a kind of wide number of approaches to educational development. So notion of effective schools, the notion of improved or developed schools, the notions of good practice or best practice or practice excellence are all notions which hide their value basis. They're notions which claim or imply a neutrality of values, but they obscure the values which they represent. And I suppose this movement to obscure values was sort of grasped with the title of Alistair MacIntyre's book, 1981, After Virtue. It was, and in that he said, the language and appearance of morality persist, even though the integral substance of morality has to a large degree been fragmented and then in part destroyed. Well, without a sort of ability to discuss morality, it's very hard to debate and discuss the worth of action. So my approach to educational development is to remoralize it. I define development in terms of, putting particular values into action. So development for me is the putting into action of a framework of inclusive values. You can interrupt me at any time if this, you have some thought which you'd like to share. And I've I had represented these as a list, as lists under a number of subheadings, but I've decided to represent it in three dimensions to imply it forms a kind of universe, universe, a philosophy of action. And the headings for my values I've attached here to a dodecahedron. And they are equality, rights, participation, community, sustainability, respect for diversity, nonviolence, trust, compassion, honesty, courage, joy, love, hope, beauty, and judgment, or wisdom. Now, unlike some others, I don't see those words as carrying values in themselves. They're just headings. They're headings for values which require careful explication. So, without explaining why beauty is there as a value, some people say, well, you can't have that. It's a really excluding value. I mean, everybody's always comparing themselves to people of perfect face and figure, and you should take that out. All the values headings are there because in many, many conversations with colleagues in this country and in other countries, we've sort of shared in our discussion what it is, what are our fundamental beliefs which act as spurs to action. And I've shared the idea that one of the most motivating forces in my life has been both the observation of those kind of moments of beauty when somebody has made something that they really love, or they notice that somebody else has and they admire it, or for no reason of reward, there is an act of kindness. Or more complexly in my work, it's when I think, I've constructed something which has some harmony and it connects with other people. And that for me is something I would strive to do, to make something that is of beauty. So beauty is there as an inclusive value for education. Then, and of course, if you think, what are the implications of having a notion of beauty for what happens in schools and classrooms and in relations between schools and communities? It provides a wealth of ideas of those things that many people would wish to see happen. And that's one notion there. Within this idea of inclusive values, it has a sort of dark background. And I thought of that dark background in this universe as values as the sort of dark matter of the dark matter of the universe, which people tell me makes up 70% of matter, and it's undetectable apart from in the perturbations it makes on matter. So behind inclusive values, there's a kind of dark matter which is perhaps constructing or represented by excluding values, which are there, but often not seen. So this isn't in the index for inclusion, but it's ideas that I've had subsequently that it's worth thinking about and representing the framework of excluding values. So notions of equality are replaced by hierarchy, and rights by only opportunity. Participation by consumption, and community narrowed down to a narrow notion of family. Sustainability by exploitation. Respect for diversity by monoculture. Nonviolence by efficiency. Trust by surveillance or notions of accountability. Compassion by self-interest. Honesty by image, courage by compliance, joy by reward and punishment, love by authority, hope by determinism, beauty by selection and competition, and judgment by power. And that framework of excluding values, I don't pretend that there was some clear match between my framework of including values and my framework of excluding values. But what I'm trying to say is it's recognizable. Those are the headings for the values that we recognize as guiding many of the actions we encounter within education. Does that seem reasonable? And I think that what happens with excluding values, which again, they require detailed explication and detailed work of discussion and dialogue in order to understand the extent to which this forms a sufficient framework. But it's kind of not too bad. And I think what happens with excluding values is we kind of recognize them when we're confronted with them. But we operate so they're always rather hidden from us, even within ourselves. So we know we're kind of complex people. We live within this society in which actions are formed and motivated by the values which we might, in discussion, wish to reject. And so those reasons and rationale for our actions become hidden. Let's go back to the framework of inclusive values. What I've tried to do is to think, is this framework of inclusive values, is that sufficient for me to shape what I would want to understand in terms of the detailed action that takes place within education? And it goes some way. But I also carry in mind a set of principles for education, rather like Dewey's My Pedagogic Creed. And those principles include ideas that education should relate learning to individual and collective experience. It should build from practical to theoretical knowledge, linking the academic and the vocational. It should link reasoning with emotion. It should link activities of school with political life outside it. It should make education as much about being in the present as becoming in the future. It should involve everyone as active citizens. It should help people to understand the interdependence of people and environments. And So the values added to the principles which are there, and I've added a further notion, which is the notion of imperatives. So in thinking about how we develop education, there are some things we cannot afford not to do, and yet we know that we don't do them. One of them is construct consciously within education an environment which will reduce violence. I don't think we do that consciously, and yet it feels like an imperative. It was such a, what Adorno said in the 60s. If there was one thing education had to do, it had to make sure that Auschwitz never happened again. It seemed like such an imperative that people would take it on board and it would affect the structure and content of education. But he wasn't right about that. People didn't take it on board, particularly. And another imperative for me is the notion that education, if it does little else, must help people to contribute to the reduction of environmental deterioration. That seems like an imperative, and therefore should shape the nature of education. So I've sort of carried these ideas of the framework of inclusive values, the notion of principles which are related to those values, and some imperatives, into the way in which I've constructed this edition of the Index for Inclusion. The Index for Inclusion, then, is a way of asking what these values, principles, and imperatives might mean for the detail of what goes on within schools, in staff rooms, classrooms, playgrounds, and in the relationship between people, between adults, between children, between adults and children, between the people within schools and the people within communities. And it gets down to a level of detail. So when people say, oh, those ideas about values and principles and imperatives are fine in theory, but what does it mean in practice? Well, the Index has set out the most detailed notion of what they might mean in practice that has been set down, it seems to me. Most clearly related in something like 2,000 questions, each of which prompts a reflection back on the imperatives and the principles and the values that lie behind them, and I'll come on to that. One of the key ideas of the Index for Inclusion is that it should represent a singular approach to educational development. And it's an approach which attempts to link together all principled interventions in education. It's been suggested that the biggest barrier to educational development is the wealth of initiatives that are beamed at and introduced to schools. And we're often part of that. And often we had a project in not very long ago in which the partner of one of my collaborators was also doing an intervention in the same schools that I was working in the same borough, simultaneously. And this, I hadn't even been told this. And it, you know, I had to take several deep breaths. But I, knowing that this issue of intervention compatibility, intervention overlap, intervention contradiction, and intervention overload is a huge barrier to educational development. So there is an attempt in the Index to draw these issues together, and this is a kind of pictorial representation, which uses a tree, which is the idea of issues of health promotion, learning without limits, comprehensive education, anti-discrimination, education for sustainability, non-violent education, collaborative education, values-based, rights-based, education for global citizenship, community education or democratic education. These are common roots to a common tree. And I think that you need a superordinate concept. And I happen to call that use the notion of inclusion as a superordinate concept to cover the linking together of these principled interventions. But I don't think it matters a jot if you use inclusion or some other word. But it does matter that you should link these interventions together. Of course, whenever you give a lecture, and this perhaps it won't happen here, and perhaps it will, if someone always sort of comes up to you and says, you can't use trees as a positive image anymore, because trees carry a notion of hierarchy. So I made up that T-shirt, but more or less, this person said to me, you should hate trees and love rhizomes. You know, the notion of Deleuze and Guattari, that we should be talking about rhizomes, which are networks, and they have nodes, and they're much better than, and much more democratic than trees. And trees can be, they can be quite dark places. I mean, these are the processional, the larva of the oak processional moth. Have you heard about this? It's going to destroy all the oak trees in London. Huh? It hasn't come to Cambridge yet. Has it?
I thought
no, please. If it's come to Cambridge, I can worry about that too.
Some
oh, okay. Well, they look as if they're quite prolific. But I also discover, rhizomes can have rot too. And there are rhizome trees. So, there is a rebuttal of this this idea. But anyway, I think trees can be a very positive metaphor. And we can leave the notions of hierarchy. So, I've linked my work, I would link my work quite closely with the Learning Without Limits project coming from this department. There's a book, recent book of theirs called Creating Learning Without Limits, based on Wroxham School in Hertfordshire, Alison Peacock's school. And it's a very good book. Unfortunately, I got to review it, which feels like a bit of a pressure. But it is similar in a similar way to my work. They emphasise a framework of principles. They stress the idea of values into action rather than evidence into action, which is the more a conventional notion of development. It's not that you get rid of evidence, but evidence is only useful to the extent that it promotes values that you support. I mean, it doesn't mean you deny. You only want evidence that supports your view, but you're not really interested in shaping an education system in a direction that evidence tells you it should be shaped if you don't support that way. Learning Without Limits, it's about transforming adults as well as children. So in the Index for Inclusion is about adults as much as it is about children too. So there's no point or hope in developing an institution for children unless you're also developing it for adults. They stress the importance of imperatives and the notion of passion which emerges from imperatives. And I think that also, like my notion of inclusion, the notion of Learning Without Limits stands for a wider project. It's not just about learning without recourse to ability labeling or ability grouping or ability thinking. It's also about a wider notion of developing schools in a non-authoritarian way, for example. And I think, like the work that I'm done on inclusion, the notion of learning without limits is intended as a transforming idea. And I think there's some of the notion of inclusion in the index is meant as a transforming idea. Well, because of the imperative that I mentioned, the index has indicators which are about environmental sustainability. The school encourages understanding of the connections between people around the world. The school and local communities develop each other. The school encourages respect for the integrity of planet Earth. The school reduces its carbon footprint and use of water. The school contributes to the reduction of waste. Children explore cycles of food production and consumption. Children investigate the importance of water. Children find out about housing and the built environment. Children consider how and why people move around their locality in the world. Children investigate sources of energy. So the index becomes a way in which those people who want to build an intervention in education around issues of sustainability not only can see the presence of that in this approach to development, but also link it with development of the whole school. Other indicators in the index that I hadn't included previously, in an attempt to draw together and make explicit the a range of principled interventions, include this idea of the school being a model of democratic citizenship, getting away from the idea of citizenship as a lesson or a set of lessons, but as a way of being with others. The school encourages connections between people around the world. Adults and children are responsive to a variety of ways of being a gender. The school promotes nonviolent interactions and resolutions to disputes. The school encourages respect for human rights. The school encourages children to be confident, critical thinkers. The school has a participatory development process. The school has an inclusive approach to leadership. I think the index would connect well, I think, with the learning for leadership work that goes on in this faculty. So here's an example of the way in which an indicator links to questions. So, and also if we take just the first question, so we have children are encouraged to be confident critical thinkers, and then there's a range of questions in relation to that indicator, and the first is, does staff support each other to be confident critical thinkers? You can ask that in schools, you can ask it in universities, but you have to ask it, and commonly it's not asked in schools. And questions have this function of, there's the question, and it could, people can understand the way it relates to action, so even quite specific action, but they can also understand that behind the question there are values and principles. So are all new staff formally welcomed by representatives of the children? Seems like a kind of reasonable thing to do. It isn't something you encounter very often. There's a way of being within a school that is linked to that question. Do adults and children consider who owns and who claims to own air and water? Do staff consider under what circumstances homework contributes to or detracts from learning? You know, then why the question mark so small? This is the kind of heartfelt cry from any parent who's ever sort of worked with their children over their homework. The children don't understand what it means. The parents don't understand. So you negotiate together some kind of meaning for this next hour or so that your child is going to engage in, and then hope that it'll be over quite quickly. Do meetings with parents share knowledge about children rather than only convey knowledge from staff to parents? And okay, in the era of the Jubilympics, there has to be a question about the monarchy. Do children explore the nature of the monarchy in the UK, how it came about, and whether it represents a stage on the route to a more mature democracy? You know, I mean, when you're writing, I was sitting in the cafe writing this, and I thought, well, there has to be a question about the monarchy, and I started writing this and wrote this question, and then I thought, you can't put that. And I kind of crossed it out, thinking, no, you know, people won't, if they find that that there's a question, it's not me criticizing the monarchy, it's encouraging people to ask questions about the monarchy. But I thought, if they find that, they won't use the index. I don't think anyone's found it yet, you know, because there are 2,000 questions in the index. So, you know, given the proportion of people who, I don't know whether people would be offended, but it just reminded me of how far we are because of my, you know, I'm reasonably kind of liberal in my educational views, but even I hesitated and thought, maybe you can't. And yet, you know, what we should be doing is encouraging children to ask questions that are far more difficult and contentious and than this. And so it's there, and let many more contentious questions flow from it. What I realized was in the past, in previous versions of the index, I'd made this claim that the index set out in detail the implications of inclusive values for all aspects of a school. And I realized this was a sort of a falsehood. There was a sort of gap, a large area, a lacuna at the heart of the index, which was the nature of teaching and learning activities. And I think it was because it had been written at a time when, initially in 2000, when the national curriculum was so bedded in that to kind of raise the idea that it might all be done differently seemed impossible. So I kind of forgot it, even though I remembered in the early, more recently, I remember in the early 80s, I'd scribbled down a number of headings on a little piece of paper about how you might construct a curriculum around basic rights as opposed to the traditional subjects. And then I'd sort of lost the piece of paper and it kind of never seemed worth following. But I've followed it up now. So if you think of a values framework as how we should live together, and a sort of formal curriculum should be related to it because it's what we need to know in order to live well. And then between the two, you can construct an educational environment with its informal and formal teaching and learning activities. And I've looked at, you know, thought about that, the nature of the traditional curriculum, a curriculum designed, it seems, to separate knowledge from experience, to support the education of those who can make that transition easily, and to not support the education of those who find that transition difficult. So it's, at its heart, is a way of preventing people learning, it seems to me. And it would be recognizable to people more or less in that form over the last 100 years. It kind of emerges from the 19th century. It's not a curriculum for the 21st century or a curriculum for everybody. Now, when I say that, you know, here you're all very quiet anyway, but people don't really sort of jump up and object. And so it kind of seems that, okay, well, let's sort of think of something else. And so I've sort of thought of my curriculum around these headings. It's a curriculum. It's a rights-based curriculum, which is can be locally adapted and globally relevant. It links knowledge and experience. It doesn't separate vocational and academic education. It's a curriculum which involves the concerns of everyone within a community, not those that the school might want to pick as being contributors to the curriculum, and so on. So children would learn about the production and consumption of food, the importance of water, clothing, and the decoration of the body, housing and the built environment. Mobility and transport is how and why people move around their locality and the world, area that is brings together migration and trade, as well as forms of transport. Health and relationships, the Earth, the solar system, and the universe, life on Earth, sources of energy, communication and communication technology, children both learning about and engaging in literature, arts, and music, connecting notions of work and activity, and learning about ethics, power, and government. Now, I've shared this idea with many people, and I've had very few objections, so I'd be delighted to get more. What I have had is somebody in Germany, I was speaking to, I think there was 500 of teachers, and one teacher got up at the end and she said, "Well, you know, we all agree with you," which I thought, well, no, I had no idea, and nor did she, I don't suppose, but she said, but we couldn't put this into practice. And I suppose that's, at the moment, and it's quite a detailed curriculum that I've worked out, it's there as an invitation to dialogue, and people are gradually taking up the invitation. We have a few schools who are sort of beginning to use elements of it. But I have no delusion that schools are going to use the arrow that way, and that more commonly it will be that way, that it will be used to enrich a more traditional curriculum. But maybe, you know, a few will think about it that way. There's a lot of interest in this work in Germany, and so that's a bit, dialogues are a little further ahead there than they are here. So they've set up a conference in September in Cologne to discuss these ideas. And it's a sort of, you don't necessarily need a huge evaluation project to get some support. Well, I was talking about my ideas about the curriculum in Utrecht. And it was a mixed audience, and a woman who'd not had a great experience of school. When I finished, she got up and she said, "You know, when I was listening to you talking about your curriculum, I sort of realized maybe I wasn't so stupid in school as I was always told that I was." She said, "I used to sort of stare out of the window, and my teacher would say, 'Everything you need to know is in here on the blackboard.' And I would think to myself, 'No, everything I need to know is up there with the blackbird.'" So. You know, and at the same meeting, you've got but have you read, the person who says they can't absorb what you're saying to them because it doesn't fit with their reading. So somebody said, "You know, I heard you about your curriculum, but there already is a global curriculum which has been produced by Martha Nussbaum in her work on capabilities." Well, you know, I hadn't spent a lot of time on the notion of capabilities up to that point, but I kind of started engaging with it, well, more or less immediately. And, well, you couldn't really say that what Martha Nussbaum has done is a comparable in terms of a sort of detailed working out of a curriculum. She has identified a basic set of capabilities. You know, I don't know how many of you are familiar with Amartya Sen's capabilities approach, and probably most of you are, but Amartya Sen suggested that we should think differently about the notion of poverty and of development of development in society, and shift away from simply thinking in terms of monetary terms, and broaden it in terms to think in terms of the freedom to achieve the things we want to do and be. And that seems a good idea. And Martha Nussbaum wanted to summarize a core set of the things that we should be able to do and be. And I've adapted my set of headings here from her list of core capabilities. And I have to say, I don't find her list of core capabilities very easy to absorb, and I think I've made them more easy to absorb. But like whenever you produce a list, like my framework of values, you might want to reorganize it. And I think what's happened with this list is it was formulated in about 2003, and it hasn't sort of had a bit of reorganization. So experiencing longevity, enjoying bodily health, and being in control of one's own body perhaps could be, you know, linked together. And being in control of one's own body includes notions of migration as well as bodily integrity, which is not obvious from looking at the heading and so on, but I've done some work about on it. And I kind of think that in thinking about the idea of what it is that people want to do and be, that my values framework and the curriculum work contribute to how that might be achieved through education. And so is another way of linking principled interventions in education, the capabilities approach and the approach that I've developed through the index. So I kind of think that capabilities both link to the notions of the values framework and my idea of curriculum, but also my ideas about values and curriculum express how ideas of what one might want to do and be could be realized through education. But kind of quite a lot, isn't it? I'm going to we have a project with the index. I'll tell you a little bit about what's happened with the new edition. One in Norfolk, which is sort of leading the way in terms of implementation, they were part of the they were the county that worked with the draft version, the penultimate draft, and they've made it into a common text for school improvement. So it's been interesting how my work on trying to create the notion of a singular approach to development seems to be I seem to have managed to communicate that with the people in Norfolk, so that all the advisors are using this as a common text. And then it's spreading across the local authority, so that people within children's services, the non-education part of children's services, are wanting to adapt it to education settings outside schools. And then the council has said that we would like the 450 schools in Norfolk to have access to it. And so it will be used within all schools, or it'll be present in all schools. And the use will be encouraged by 12 hub schools who've been previously involved in work with it. And, you know, like, while I might want the index to transform the 450 schools, I'm well aware that it won't do that, and there'll be a few schools who take it on in some kind of depth, and many schools will use some aspect of it. And it shouldn't be, it would be strange if all the schools took it on in depth, because to do that would mean that the political and social and moral landscape of the UK had also been transformed, and really books can't do that. So I was sort of thinking, in planning an evaluation of this work with the 450 schools, what's one's expectation? Well, first of all, the investment is something like 150,000 quid, which spread over 450 schools over 2 years, works out at 120 or 30 pounds per year per school, which as somebody who was kind of feeling anxious about being a hub school and thinking, God, we've got to change all these 40 schools that are connected to our hub. They thought, oh, well, I suppose 120 pounds is about what you pay for somebody going off for a training afternoon. And it kind of brought it down to scale. But then I was also thinking, well, many of those schools simply wouldn't sign up to this framework of values. I mean, they would support other values, which are not the values in the index. So, there's a way of sort of working out a set of baseline expectations based on the reality that intervention is not neutral. I ought to come to an end in about 5 minutes. Yeah. So while Yolanda's here, I ought to say, Yolanda's from Spain, and she and I are working together on a project in Chile, which is, you know, a complex and messy project, and whether or not we can exert enough control, or whether or not the concepts of the index have sufficient push to enable us to get enough control to make an intervention possible and valuable, we're going to find out over the next year or two. This rather lovely thing was made by a group of children in a school which feels rather down on itself, as if, you know, nothing very good happens here. And then they offer, you know, this to choose from a range of things that the children have made collectively. And I chose this sort of lovely saxophone player. So we have a project supporting inclusive development, educational development in Chile, and it has a question mark because nothing may come of it. At the moment, we have a colleague working with four schools, we've narrowed down a set of ideas for what might happen in the first 6 months. These four schools, like most schools in Chile, are attached to the private sector. We've set ourselves the aim that we wish to work with the public sector, and that will be a mark of a stage in this success of this project. If we can gain the support of schools in the public sector, the problem being that any money that's transferred to support the project has to go through the private sector. So these are complexities. And at the same time, there's a student movement which is saying we want our education back. We don't want an education which is private from the beginning of education until we finish university. And of course, when we understand inclusion and exclusion in Chile, you also understand, yes, it's hard to make changes and to make interventions in Chile, but it also always throws light on the problems and difficulties of making changes at home, closer to home, even in one's own home. The messiness that we try to clear up, this is... There's a German performance artist called Ursus Verli, and he's constructed these ideas. You know, some approaches to clearing up the messiness of education take away its meaning entirely. Here we are. The program for nursery education in this country is... Well, I hope I've said something about some of the problems of messiness, some of the ways in which perhaps we don't want to clear it up, and there are possible ideas within the index, I think, for some of the ways that we might contribute to reducing the messiness or working on the messiness with a cleaner rag. Thank you.